All right, welcome. Let's call this meeting to order. The first order of business is today, I'm going to look super dorky with my sunglasses on because I left my glasses in Ames. And I can't see the agenda without my bifocals. So you can go ahead and laugh. It's okay. So welcome, everybody. Stephanie, let's do roll call.
All right, sounds good. Hey, Conrad.
Present.
Jonathan Berger.
Present.
Ann Johnson. David Meyer.
Is that a yes?
Sorry, I'm here.
Elizabeth Rhodes Reed. John Suka.
Here.
David Van Allen.
Here.
Julie Stowe.
Here.
And Maria Moore.
So we're missing Anne,
Betsy, and Maria.
Betsy.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope everybody had a chance to read the minutes. They were pretty short and succinct. Do we have any changes or amendments to the minutes? Any input?
Changes. I wouldn't know. I wasn't here.
Okay. Well, if we're happy with what's in there, do we have a move to approve?
I'll approve.
I'll second.
Thank you, John and Jonathan. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The minutes are approved. Thank you. Do we have public input today?
Let's see. It does not look like it.
No,
okay.
No public input. Okay. So now we have Vanessa Chavez, our city attorney, joining us to talk about training for boards and commissions. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you. My name is Vanessa Chavez. I'm the city attorney, and I just wanted to, I'm making the rounds through all the commissions so that you guys are getting your refresher on the training you've already received at the time that you guys were appointed to the board. So what I am doing today is literally just bringing you principles that you've already heard. We're just making sure you hear more frequently so that hopefully when or if these arise, you guys have them a little bit fresher in your minds. So I won't be telling you anything today, hopefully, that you haven't heard before. But if you have questions, by all means, please stop me and ask me or even ask me at the end. So there are four things that I want to talk about today. The first is your authority and where it originates from. The second is open meetings. Third is public records. And the last one is conflicts. So for the Public Arts Commission, your authority is derived from the resolution that established this commission. It establishes what your goals and objectives are, and also really those parameters that you're supposed to be operating within as far as, you know, what you are trying to accomplish. The other area where you, okay, so think of this, so we talk frequently about the city being a creature of the state. You guys should think of yourselves as a creature of the city. So what that means is that, like, the city can't do anything that the state wouldn't let it do. You guys can't do anything that the council wouldn't let you do. So if it's not part of your charge, it's not part of your authority, you guys don't have the authority to do it outside of granted. So the good thing about the way that this has been established is you are given a certain level of autonomy. Now, this is something the city council could have done itself. It could have decided to retain the decisions regarding public are exclusively to itself instead of deciding to appoint a commission and really rely on your expertise. And so when you're coming together as a board or as a commission, what you're doing is you're bringing that collective expertise and allowing the council to benefit from the fact that you do bring this special viewpoint to the board. Now, when you are working, there's a plan. You guys already have a public art plan in place that dictates really where you're trying to go. And so we look at that as the, not necessarily internal operations, but really like that's your direction. So whatever you're doing should be consistent with that, just like it should be consistent with the resolution. Those are the areas where the council has already taken action to tell you what it agrees with. And so as long as you're consistent with those, you are consistent with what the council has given you direction to do. Now, going back, so we run into this a lot more when we have people in different settings, but it's always good to remember that your authority is as a group. No individual member of this commission has any authority to represent themselves as the commission to say that they can make, they can guarantee something, that something, you know, that they have the right to speak on behalf of the commission, unless that's already been established and somebody's going to be representing them, because every individual person has their authority solely when they are working together as this body. When you guys are in your meetings and you're having these discussions and you're taking action, this is where your authority, this is where all of that happens.
I used to run an art gallery at Mount Mercy, and we had an art department that pretty much decided what went up in the gallery, because it was all based on what classes were being taught.
Okay.
And but in point of fact, you know, first order of business in the spring meeting that determined what the next season would look like, first order of business was everybody fessed up as to who they promised a show to. That seems to be in direct contrast with what you just described.
It definitely does indeed. So the next issue is really those open meetings. So when you are seated here, you're working as the commission, you are subject to open meetings just like everybody else who is operating on the direction of the council. And that's because you are a creature of the council. The council has the authority to take action, and it delegates that authority to somebody else. That other person or that other entity, now has that same obligation for the Open Meetings Act. So really think of it as it's following the body that is being asked to perform that role. You have a 9-member board, which means that your quorum is 5, which obviously you guys already know because you knew exactly how many people to wait for before you guys started your meetings. So when we look at quorum, we're looking at it for a couple of reasons. The first is the quorum to be able to conduct business, so calling your meeting to order. If you don't have quorum, you can't actually do that. Instead, what you would do if at any time you don't have the quorum, the only thing you're able to do is call the meeting to order, know that there is a lack of quorum, and then recess the meeting at that point.
So you don't get to chat about things and informally.
No.
Right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
I'm on another board that just had not a quorum last week, and we chatted. We didn't vote on anything, but we talked about the things. So that wasn't a government board.
Okay. As long as it's not a city board, I'm okay.
Yeah. So, okay, there's another mark. Okay.
Yeah, and the reason being that those informal, you know, it's not a meeting of the city unless you actually have the adequate number in the meeting. So if you don't have that meeting to be able to establish that quorum, you're not having a meeting. You're just two people sitting there having a conversation.
So that would mean without extenuating circumstances, for instance, he had to drive 60 miles to get here, and this other board member that actually also came had to drive 30 miles to get here. That's not a good enough reason to break the rules, right?
It is not.
Yeah, okay.
That is correct.
All right, that's 3 marks. Okay.
I feel like
how many do I get?
Again, as long as you're not doing them here, we're good.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
So the other reason you need it is because when you take a vote, you need to have a quorum. You need to have that majority vote. So you don't have any, I haven't seen any supermajority requirements, anything that I've reviewed of the Public Arts Commission. Instead, you rely on your quorum, so a majority vote. When you have a membership of nine, that means you need five people to take a vote. It does change when you have less people present. As long as you don't have that supermajority, then you're looking at the majority of the people voting. And what you're looking for is that 51%, that half plus one. 51% is an easier number to reach in this context. So that's what we look for. To do more than 51% would be 5 of 9. So nice and easy. Don't ever feel like you guys need to do the math. If there's ever an issue, staff will always handle it, making sure that whatever you guys do has been done in accordance with standards and state law. The other time this comes up is when you are gathered. So in your context, you know, when you have people gather, even though it was a scheduled time, you weren't able to conduct business. So instead, you're just sitting there chatting. It comes up when you have chance gatherings, or if you are meeting for, I like to say, if somebody has a pool, a really nice pool, and it's summertime, you want to invite the entire group over, you can do that, but nobody better talk about art.
Nobody better what?
Talk about art.
Oh.
Talk about anything else related to the city.
Can they wear swimsuits?
You can wear anything you want, as long as you are not talking about art. You can talk about potholes in the city. You can talk about the police department. You can talk about the fire department. You can talk about me. You can talk about Stephanie. Just don't talk about anything that falls within the jurisdiction. And that applies anytime you have a quorum. So if you have five people, make sure that you absolutely do not discuss anything related to what your work is on the board. And then remember, it pertains to your work. So what you're charged with, not just items that have been on an agenda or coming up onto an agenda, it's items within your purview.
What if it were something like a picnic or something that we have the chair decides to thank people on the committee for serving on this committee and especially this project and this project and this project. Am I getting close to breaking the rules here? Just sort of synopsizing.
When you have your picnic, invite one of us and we will come and tell you. I'm just kidding. No, if you're ever in that situation where you're worried about it, you know, just ask us. We're more than happy to provide some guidance on what's going to be problematic. What I will say is that when you're just talking about things and you're thanking people, that's not really within your purview. You know, council is the one who generally thanks people for their service, not the members of the community itself. So I wouldn't say that would necessarily fall within your purview. Your purview is to figure out what the public art should look like in the city of Cedar Rapids.
So we wouldn't be comparing notes on which mural proposal we liked best.
Correct.
Something like that. Okay.
Correct. So chance gatherings, if at some point you find yourself in a community event and there's five of you, no problem. That happens. And the expectation isn't that one of you needs to leave. The expectation is just that you will not talk about it. It's always safest if you don't have that quorum. So if there's four of you, attending an event and you already know it and you're contemplating whether or not you want to go yourself and you kind of don't really want to, it'd be okay for you to sit that one out, because then we don't have to worry about even an appearance of quorum. But really what we are most concerned about when we look at the Open Meetings Act is whether or not a meeting has occurred. And so it's looking at both the people that are present and what you're talking about.
Now, it used to be that if everybody smoked cigars, it was okay to do that. No. I'm sorry.
You're fine.
An email counts.
An email does count.
Email counts.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yep. So
we've had a couple of near misses on that.
Stephanie warned us. She jumped right in.
She did.
She was like, stop.
So when you are the safest thing, this is what I tell people to do, and this is what I do in practice, BCC. Whoever is on your commission when you're sending something out. So if you want to send something, sharing information is not a problem. It's when you start having that dialogue where you start engaging in any kind of conversation that becomes problematic.
That's a distinction. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is make sure, and it's easy to just reply all. So either don't reply all, or as the sender, what I do is I will send an email and I will put everybody who I don't want to be able to hit that reply all into the BCC so that they can't do that by accident. It is a problematic issue because you can, if you start having a conversation and sufficient people are part of that conversation, it is subject to open meetings requirements. The other issue with that is that, So the other thing that we need to do in order to have a lawfully permitted meeting is to have notice to the public, and it has to be 24 hours in advance. It's going to be rare that we'd be able to have a meeting in less than 24 hours. And that means if we change the room location to a different building rather than just like moving it next door, so too many people show up or something, or if we completely change the agenda or something, we have to give that 24-hour notice. The state is very strict on that, that the public is entitled to attend. So we always take care of the notice. But what happens is if you hold that meeting without the public being aware, like having that adequate 24-hour notice, not being privy to the emails that are being sent, it's considered a closed session. And so it's a problem because when you go into closed session, there's only a handful of reasons that you're allowed to go into closed session. And so the action that you take can potentially be voided and also potentially get us into trouble from a legal standpoint for violations of the Act. So when in doubt, just don't reply all. So there's always a question about whether public participation is required. The answer is it is not required. There is nothing in state law or even in our city ordinances which mandates that we allow the public to participate in these conversations. That doesn't mean that they're not entitled to show up. They absolutely are entitled to show up. Their role is to watch. At the city, we have decided to allow people to participate. So we have them, we have designated public comment periods. And those are the only times when public participation is permitted. Otherwise, everything needs to be limited to what is actually on the agenda. And it should be the board and staff that are having that, the board having that conversation with staff supporting that.
And could you review how that public input looks like a small conversation?
Yeah.
Back and forth. Yeah.
Yes. So, again, this is, as Stephanie's pointing out, it's public comment. It's public comment period. So the reason we have it set up that way is the public is able to come and participate.
It's not public debate period.
Correct. It's okay. Comment period. They're not required to have anything on the agenda to have that public comment. They are able to talk about anything. We're not. So even though the public can come and talk about something that's, you know, potentially coming that they would like to see art established for them, you know, they have this mural that would be the perfect fit, and they have some great ideas for who should be the artist that is selected. They are sharing that information with you for your consideration. If it is something that you ultimately think that you would like to discuss, it needs to be added as an agenda item for a future agenda so that the rest of the public is aware of what's coming up and what you will be discussing, so that they can also come and provide their input.
I'm imagining the fuzziness as it approaches that line that we can't cross, fuzzy area. What if something becomes contentious? In fact, somebody gets really, really outrageous, takes their shoe off, pounds on the table, starts slipping insults. I guess the chair would then try to calm them down, or somebody on the board try to calm them down. But in order to calm them down, a certain amount of explanation is necessary. You know, we have to do it this way. We have to do it this way. You know, we talked about that last week, but so-and-so said this and so-and-so. I mean, at some point you're going to start releasing information, or you could conceivably start releasing information that you really shouldn't be. for the sake of trying to tone down the argument, I don't know. It just seems to me that there's a weak area there, and the weakness would be in people's tolerance for being sworn at. to try to explain it, but in order to give it a legitimate, you know, complete explanation that perhaps might even satisfy this person, you would be tempted to reveal information that's really not, that you're really not supposed to.
So what I will say is what you're really referring to is rules of decorum and how you handle somebody who is no longer following rules established for providing public comment. If it becomes an issue or you feel like at the beginning of the meeting we need to have some rules provided to the public so they're aware of what our expectations are from them, it works when we tell people, we are here to listen. This is a public comment period. And our role right now is to listen. That is all that we will be doing at this point. A lot of people hear that and they will respect that for the most part. Now, when people start engaging in unruly behavior, then it's really whether or not the chair needs to take action to control the meeting. That is a completely different issue that we should talk about more as it comes up. Like if you start running into situations that are contentious and we do need to take some action to
state them or something.
Correct. And then we can provide some training on how to handle issues and run a meeting while maintaining decorum.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a completely different skill set.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right.
Do you have anything else you want me to cover?
As for public open?
Oh, I'm not public or open meetings.
I just am curious if anyone had any questions about anything related to the open meetings that she was talking about.
Okay, so let's talk public records. It is often a least favorite topic because it can feel a little bit intrusive. You know, you're volunteering your time to be on this commission and then you are under a public microscope. And unfortunately that really is just the nature of public service. And so what we try to do is make it as least intrusive of a process for you while still complying with the requirements of state law. So if at any time you receive a records request, we will always, as staff, be the ones to handle it. You know, we will be the ones to notify notify you of any records that have been requested. We will take the burden on of going through any city records that we have access to. But your records, whether they pertain to this, so there's really two real times that you'll get requests for records that affect you all. One is it's a document that you've received from us, or it's a document that was generated on a computer, like if you're using a city terminal for some reason. Those are always public records because it's a city equipment. The other one, more likely, is if you're using your personal computers for anything or using personal account, then at that point, whatever you're doing that relates to city business is still public record. So the fact that it is in a personal email originating on personal device is irrelevant. It just means that we need to ask you to provide those yourselves. We will never ask you to bring in your personal device and let us go through anything. We will never ask you to provide us access to your emails or your private accounts in order to gather those records. Instead, the obligation is that you are your own records custodian for your private accounts. And we would figure out exactly what is being asked for, and we would ask you to provide those to us. Any review that needs to be conducted from that point on will be handled by staff, including whether or not there are exemptions to the public records or legal requirements that would prevent us from producing records. That said, I would just advise you that pretty much anything you do related to this board is considered public, and you should write emails assuming that they will be disclosed to somebody at some point. And so that doesn't mean you can't, you know, joke around. We don't want to completely take all the fun out of all the fun things that you guys do, but just be very wary of the fact that at some point somebody could ask for it, and it's hard to reflect tone in an email. The last thing is conflicts of interest. You know, the time I see you all running into this the most would be when you're evaluating proposals. So when you run into a conflict of interest, what we're really talking about is potential for a monetary gain to be made by you in some way, shape, or form. That applies not only to you personally, it also applies to your immediate family. So if you have somebody who is submitting a proposal or has somehow impacted, so they work for the person who submitted the proposal, that's when you would need to recuse yourself because you do have a conflict at that point. The other time that it comes up is in the form of bias. So this you wouldn't necessarily, this isn't going to be like a conflict where you would need to recuse yourself because you are receiving a monetary value. You would need to recuse yourself because you're potentially biased against somebody who's coming in front of you. So if you are unable to put any personal feelings you have aside, at that point you should consider whether or not you have a bias and should be participating in any decisions. Now, that said, you're the only person who is able to determine whether or not you are biased. So if, for example, somebody came and said, you know what, I know you don't like me, and I think that you absolutely cannot be fair to me, so I don't want you on there. You need to recuse yourself or I'm going to challenge this. If you do an evaluation and determine, you know what, we have had our differences in the past, but I am able to set that aside. I am able to do this and also, you know, do it right. I can put my personal feelings, you know, completely to the side and do what I need to do. That's your determination. And the courts will give you a ton of deference on your ability to be unbiased. What I will say is that at any point, something comes up where you either have a close connection, but it's not going to rise to a conflict of interest, you should disclose it, just put it on the record so that people, you know, it's easy, it's always best to just disclose because then it doesn't come up later, people saying that you were trying to edit. Same thing if you have a potential bias, bring up that you've had run-ins with somebody in the past, but that you can completely unbiased in the situation, put it on the record. And that is the only thing that you need to do to ensure that you guys are able to proceed. Yes.
I got another question. I'm looking back at a meeting we had at least 1 year ago, it might have been two, where somebody brought in a proposal to buy a copy of the love sculpture, you know, the one with the blocks, you know, the O sideways and the V, you know, a little pile of blocks. Said love, and we could get it in a variety of different sizes, and we could put it wherever we wanted to in the city, and several people on the board at that time were pretty appalled by that, mostly because it's a cliche to, and it's like the dictionary. If there was a picture in the dictionary under for cliche, this would be it. This love sculpture, and Robert Indiana, the artist who made it, has long since disavowed it and is totally upset that it got so much coverage and got so much, and has turned into this cultural cliche. And anyway, so I brought up my personal philosophy as an artist that one of the things I'm after is to try to somehow tap into the zeitgeist. The zeitgeist would be like the pulse of the people. You know, how can you do a piece that, you know, sort of reverberates in the circulatory system of people? You know? That's one of my, you know, lofty goals. You know, at least I'm looking in that direction. And so I said, and I saw this happening in Mexico. But I don't see it happening very much in this country because there's so much negativity. There's so much polarity. There's so many stupid people.
We need to get to the point.
Yeah, just a second.
I think she's got two more commissions to do.
Oh, do you? Okay. All right. Anyway, so sorry. So I told him that, and this is where my bias comes in. I have my personal feeling is that the American zeitgeist is not really all that positive a thing. It doesn't really feel to me like love is the zeitgeist of America. Now, a lot of people would disagree with me on that one. But then I went on to say, you know, if we're gonna follow my criteria, we really ought to be putting up the word hate. I realized right away that was a really bad thing to say because I really upset the person who proposed this. And, did I step over a line? I'm answering my own question. Like, what do you think?
I would have to see the context of that meeting. What I will say is that, you know, bias against an idea is different from like prejudging something. So, you know, what you all do is pretty abstract in a lot of ways because you're not, you're making judgment calls. And, you know, you're appointed to have opinions on what is appropriate art. So it would be really difficult to say one way or another whether you stepped over a line without really looking at the context of it. Because when we talk about bias, you know, the easy ones in this context are an issue coming before you. You've already decided what sculpture you want and you have no desire to even really consider anything else. Or if you have personal bias against the person, those are really the ones that you'll see the most frequently as problematic. If you want me to look into it, I absolutely can. If you want to give Stephanie like the time frame, I can go.
Actually, I'm rather forgettable.
Okay.
I would say it was probably an evaluative comment. I wouldn't say it was biased because it wasn't about them.
Not about people. Well, I mean individually.
Yeah.
About culture. Okay.
Well, that's the end of my presentation. What I will say is that when you all have questions, please just ask. That's what we're here for, especially when it comes to this last section on conflicts and bias. You know, those are the ones where we are potentially going to get in trouble when you guys are doing your work. So we absolutely want to make ourselves available. If at any time you feel like you need to talk to our department, by all means, get in touch with us.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.
I hope my questions aren't too.
No, it keeps it fun. It keeps it fun. Otherwise, I'm just lecturing at people, and it's not the most fun topic.
Thanks, Vanessa. Absolutely. Okay, onward we go. So we need to have a conversation about reviewing the artist selection process, and since I missed the last meeting. And I think this came up there, am I right, Stephanie or Jonathan? Feel free to type in.
What was that again, Kate?
The artist selection process. I think this came up at the last meeting as a to be a topic on the agenda. But since I wasn't there at the meeting, I don't feel like I've got the background to introduce that conversation for us.
Okay. Let's see. Who else was here? There was some public input on some additions or edits to the selection of artists. And anyone who was there, feel free to correct me. It was for helping emerging artists, local artists, as well as looking at what like the default would be if it's an open or closed call, I believe, something like that. I believe that was the
Yeah, that was my understanding. It was two things. It was really how do we explicitly identify in our vision that we are encouraging and I don't want to say focusing on, but paying attention to emerging artists. And there was also some comments about ADA accessibility to our artwork. And I think there was Stephanie did a nice job of summarizing that in an email last week or early this week about some of the points that were raised. And she did mention that there's a broader discussion or a broader clarification that the city has regarding ADA and accessibility throughout the city. So that point had been addressed, and really looking for this group to think about how do we want to address emerging artists in the artist selection process.
Yeah.
Thank you both.
Yeah, because, and I will add, thank you, David. That was a perfect summary, and Jonathan too. That was great. I will add, when I kind of, you know, did a alt F, I think, of the public art plan, you know, for the word emerging, and it appeared twice, but not in the context of the artist selection process. So it is mentioned, I think, as part of like the artist in residency, and there was one other reference to it, but yeah, not in terms of the artist selection.
So am I recalling correctly that we did add in some language about local artists, that we were looking broadly when we were putting out calls for artists?
That is a planned goal as well, is, you know, to support, you know, a broad range of artists. You know, not everything is maybe, you know, something, you know, for a local artist, you know, different opportunities, so that there is a balance between supporting local artists and regional artists and national artists, et cetera. Yeah.
And I seem to remember, and I don't know, maybe Jonathan and anybody who's been here for a while, when we talked about that particular issue as we were developing the plan, the master plan, we talked specifically about making sure that we had opportunities for local artists, and how do we make the language inclusive enough, but not so restrictive that we had a list. And so I think where we landed, if I am remembering this correctly, and I can go back and look at my notes too, is that we didn't want to make the list, because then we'd be stuck with the list of, you know, this kind of artist, that kind of artist, that we tried to use broad language. So did anybody?
I think you're correct. I think we had sort of the same conversation of our definition of what art is. And I think that also led to the committee name change as well. So I think we're trying to get away from that such strict like list, as you mentioned, Kate. Yeah.
So is there I don't know, should there be some consideration or conversation around somehow making it more obvious, for lack of a better word, when a call goes out, that there is welcome for emerging artists, or some kind of an emerging artist and a professional per se team to apply? Is there some friendly way to word that? Top of my head. Or do we want to go there? I recall that we've had artists who have submitted proposals include welcoming emerging artists or local artists, or the possibility of, you know, their team maybe comprised of some emerging artists. So maybe that's already there. I don't know.
Right. I think that sort of the discussion we're having was it can definitely be emphasized in the call for proposals. Like I can remember, I was just when I started the pocket park with the metal sculpture, and we really wanted that to be local. At least that was like the first meeting I was at, but I remember that was emphasized of getting a local artist in that proposal.
Well, then also there's the question of how do you delineate an emerging artist versus an established artist?
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know,
I'm still emerging.
Yeah,
that right. that would be my concern or
yep.
The question that I have is I'm not exactly sure what defining artist means. I mean, you can say we want a male or female artist or, you know, a local artist, but when you say emerging, it's not really clear. So I like your comment about your point about in the call out, the request that, you know, all, you know, it's an, you know, everyone is encouraged, you know, include if we want to call out emerging artists specifically, since that was a point raised by a member of the community. I think that's fine, but I still struggle to understand what that really means.
Yeah.
Well, you could almost take it to an extreme. That would be a living artist.
Yeah, you know.
You're going to limit it to living artists. They're all still emerging, you know, hopefully.
Yeah.
And I think we do a pretty good job when we're selecting, when we get all the entries. And I think we try to be as objective as possible. So it's not the level of immersion or notoriety of those artists is not as relevant as their past work or what they're proposing, depending on the project. So I think I think we're doing all right, but I think it's good to keep it in mind as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
meant to be inclusive and welcoming to anyone, right? So yeah, right. Agree.
So I think maybe the thing that, you know, that's coming to my mind is that we try the process once, the next opportunity that we have to put out a call, and we'll keep these comments in mind and see if do we need to have any sort of an amendment to the approved process. I don't think that we really have an opportunity at this point to make any changes. Council has already adopted, they voted on the master plan. It's adopted, it's a done deal. So unless we find that we made a mistake or that we feel like it really needs some amendment, I would hesitate to go back and say, hey, guess what, you guys, we think we didn't do such a good job.
Yeah, an amendment would be a big hassle.
And not to say that we can't change things. I think we can, but since we haven't even used the new process yet.
And I think the wording allows it to be pretty broad to encompass that. I think if anything, it's struggling to be not as specific as you might want it to be, well, that we might imagine it needs to be, but I think it is encompassed in there. And I think, Stephanie, you did mention that this is not so much a document that every artist that submits a proposal will look at. It's more of our framework.
Yeah, and I think it's good for us to have a conversation around it, so we have, you know, more of a common understanding of what's here and what our intention is, right?
Okay, is it possible to add something, you know, short of submitting an amendment to the council, just sort of notes to self on how to handle these things, sort of an internal secondary mission or criteria. I'm thinking that if we said something like, we'll consider all three of these categories in every proposal we get, or in every project that we have, we will sort of deliberately go, you know, local, national, emerging, and there's some other categories too that have popped up. For instance, race has popped up, and we very carefully chose some Black artists to do some things for the African Art Museum, or nearby the African Art Museum. And then we've got all these various themes that we address, injustice, et cetera, which, I'm going off the rail here. So I'll stop doing that. I think if we just sort of promised ourselves that we would consider each one of these categories each time we did maybe it looks like a checklist. Yes, we talked about local artists, found none. So now we're moving on to next box to check.
Right, David, I think that's a good point. I think it really depends on what the call for proposal is. So depending on the project,
that's right.
I think
it's really hard to make a statement to cover absolutely everything.
Right, and I think that it will come down to the project itself. It will kind of start to define itself what artists would be appropriate for said project. So I think that's why I think the wording is good and it being open, because the specifics is going to be found in the project itself.
Well, if you want to be more general, you can always just say living artists.
There you go.
Okay, so are we in agreement that we leave it as is and we decide whether we need to tinker after we try the process once?
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense.
So we'll just make sure that we, in our evaluative process, we are looking not only at our aspirational goals on the work plan, but whatever's in the master plan, as well as we start putting that process together.
Okay.
That is the last item on our agenda, folks.
Did I forget to add updates, or did I add? I don't know.
You have member updates and announcements.
Okay. So we'll have Stephanie's updates next.
Do I have updates? I have updates.
I know there's the development committee on, is it the 15th that I will be presenting something on? Yeah.
Thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, my brain is not working. Yes, exactly. Next Wednesday, the 15th at 3:30. And Jonathan, I'll be sending you that presentation here, if not tomorrow, certainly by Monday.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. So, Stephanie, do the newer members know what goes in front of the development committee and what the purpose of the presentation is?
Probably not. So yeah, good point. Thank you.
Sure.
So the development committee is a kind of a subcommittee of council. So it's three council members, and they do review, or you know, kind of get the first sneak peek of your work plan before it goes to council. So the work plan that this commission approved at your January meeting will be presented next week to the development committee. And typically a board chair or co-chair would help co-present that. And Kate's done that the past couple of years. And this year, Jonathan's going to help with that. The meeting is in person upstairs on the third floor of council chambers. Same place where council does meet. The meetings, I think it starts at 3. I think I said 3:30 before. Actually, it is at 3. It's an hour and a half meeting, but the Public Art Commission work plan is pretty early on the agenda. I think we're second, Jonathan. So My guess is we'd be up probably by 3:15. And then you're welcome to leave, right after that, if that's what you want to do, or you're also welcome to stay. And anyone here, it's a public meeting, so you're all welcome to attend. And if you'd like, I'd be happy to send you a calendar invite so you have that date and time on your calendars, and then it's up to you if you want to come or not.
What is the date and
time? It's next Wednesday, the 15th of February, 3:00. And again, it's a presentation to the development committee on
in
the
council chambers.
Yep, on the 2023 work plan. And then it would move on to council at their meeting the following week, which I'm not sure what that last Tuesday of February.
So, and from a strategy point of view, it's great that one of us is showing up. So thank you, Jonathan, for taking one for the team on this. It's also really good. I felt it's really useful because those council members are very interested in public art. They have certain opinions or feelings about what should be happening in Cedar Rapids. And I found them to be pretty forward thinking and gave us some kind of hints about the direction they would be willing to support or be supportive of. So take some notes if they say anything. Okay. But I think they also help the rest of council understand what's going on. So they're like the first, our first opportunity, and then council tends to be deferential to that group. So it seems like it's just a pro forma thing, but it really is quite important.
Sounds great.
And Stephanie always does a great job. She always makes sure that she comes back and ticks off the things that they asked her to do in the last meeting, which was a year before. But I think they appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're always actually really impressed with the amount of work this commission did, particularly last year, as 2022. Everyone put in a lot of time. Yeah, especially in the spring. Yeah, this group was very busy. Were there any other updates?
Do we know anything yet about budget?
That is, it kind of worked out that Vanessa ended up coming to this one. I think that is going to council at, I don't think it's gone to council yet. So I think that's also on their next meeting.
Okay.
Yeah. So I really don't have an update yet, but March should be.
Okay. So that should get us an opportunity to use, we hope, to use our new process.
Yeah.
And then last, have we identified any more specific locations for public art that we want to start thinking about?
There could be some things we add to next month's agenda.
Okay.
To talk about, yeah, next locations. I think that could be a good conversation too.
Okay. I don't want to wait until we know we have project funds, because if there's a problem with the site, it really puts us behind the eight ball. We've all been there. For the newer people, we've had problems. Like, we pick a site, we've got the project all worked out. We're so excited about it. And then the city engineer comes back and says, yeah, that's not going to work. And so then we have to start over, and it's really, it's disheartening.
Yeah.
So,
like replacing the Statue of Liberty on the bridge.
Yeah, but
we had a great idea for that.
We've done a better job of working with city staff, I think, to identify good locations, but it's always good to have those in mind as we start approaching our project. So
absolutely.
Thank you.
And actually, to that point, for updates, Skyblade restoration will start next month. And that contract has been signed. And Ricochet, I might have updated this group last time. Ricochet work will start in May.
Ricochet or Ricochet?
Ricochet. And that's the Ricochet. One this commission selected to go to Jones Park once it's refurbished.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Okay.
All right. Any member updates? Anyone have info or news to share?
No. I have a question just about the composition of the commission. Do we have place for two or three members for next year? Do you know?
Let's see who's outgoing. I can share my screen real quick because I don't remember off the top of my head.
Did you just put your hand up, Anne? Are you going out?
I my term is up.
Oh.
I forget when my term's up.
I'm sharing right now. I've got Jonathan. Are you up for renewal?
It's hard for me to keep track.
Have you served one term?
I believe so. I think I started in
2020. Well, we've got you through 2023. So
that's probably it.
I'll be right back. And then Maria would be up in 20. Yeah. So, Anne, I mean, 1, 2, 3.
Right.
So that's potentially three people, and Anne has served two terms. Jonathan, I guess I'm not sure. Has Maria served two terms?
I don't think so.
And two terms is the limit, correct?
Yeah, I think how it works, Anne, is you can do the two, and then you would need to have a 1-year gap, and then you could, you know, reapply to be on it again. But I think you have to have a gap.
Okay.
Your gap year.
Take a gap year.
Yeah, because I filled someone's term the first time for 2 years.
Okay.
I think I did that as well. I think I came in not with a full one, but filling in.
Gotcha.
Oh, so does that count as a full term if you finish out someone else's?
They typically keep the same cadence because they want to keep the stagger.
Okay.
So if they try and start messing with dates too much, then there's not always a good balance on when other people come off and on. So generally people fill out other terms if they fill a vacancy.
Okay.
Is the application supposed to be due in April? Is that right?
Usually I think it's April 1st.
I've forgotten.
Or sometime in April. Yeah, and I'll definitely send that out to anyone who's eligible to renew.
Yeah.
It's three terms? Only two terms? Oh, okay. Well,
so that's a good question.
I'm definitely on my way out in 2024 then.
24, yeah. Oh, we need to update too because Jonathan's actually the vice chair now.
Oh, did it not say that?
So, yeah, no, I
did still have David on there.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I need to do that.
Oh. Well, I could just grow my beard out and then David could shave off his and we're good.
I have extra if you need to borrow any.
You'll have to ask more questions.
There you go. There you go. I could do it. I could do it.
Okay. Well, that was enlightening.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else for the good of the cause? If not, we are adjourned, so I can go to physical therapy.
All right, everyone.
Thanks,
take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, I'm